Poltergeist is nothing more than a devil or a demon as far as we're concerned. People say, this guy's going back into the medieval ages. There are no such things as devils or demons. Yes, there are.
It's us again at 13 o'clock.
Yeah.
And this is episode 38.
Yeah. We got a good one. We're going to do Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yes. We are talking about the Warrens today. The Warrens infamous ghost hunting Warrens.
Infamous. Well, yes. They're not that infamous. They're just, they are famous.
In paranormal circles. Yeah. Well, I guess infamous or famous, depending on how you view them.
I like Ed and Lorraine.
they're an interesting pair.
We'll get into it.
Well, I guess they're not a pair anymore because Ed's dead. Lorraine's still alive though.
Ed passed away.
She's 90 now, I think.
Damn.
Yeah, she's getting up there.
Okay, well let's do a little bit of housekeeping.
Well, first keeping, and I do this every week, but I think I forgot to do it at the beginning of last show. But I want to give another shout out to Project Entertainment Network.
Yeah,
who hosts the audio version of the podcast. Thank you very much, you guys. You guys are. Yeah. Doing an awesome job. We're getting our downloads are really getting up there. And
they say we're probably going to get picked up by, what is it,
iHeartRadio. Yeah, we're supposed to be getting picked up by iHeartRadio, so we'll see how that goes. That would be really rad if that happened. So, that's really cool. And
Unseen Hands, the audiobook is just flying off shelves.
Yes, my new book. And it's so weird because it's really weird how my different books in the different formats, like the difference in the sales, you know, like some of the books for some reason, like sell better in print form, some sell better in ebook form.
Yeah.
This one seems to be like the audiobooks, like it's selling a lot of audiobooks.
Yeah. The Mammoth Mountain case sells very little audiobooks, not many ebook, but a lot of print.
We
don't know why.
We're not really sure why.
It has something to do with the way things are listed.
I guess so.
Because we had to fix the thing on Audible. And I think once we get that ironed out, I think that ebook will do. In fact, do we have any free copies of the audiobook for Mammoth Mountain?
Yeah, I think I do have a few copies.
Okay, if anybody wants a free copy of that,
of the audiobook of Mammoth Mountain.
We did a show about it a while back too. Yeah, because we need a review. It's been up there forever, and I don't think and it's sold copies.
Yeah,
but for some reason, no one even rated it or reviewed it.
Yeah,
and it's not really being sold alongside your other books because they have kind of like the. It says Jennifer Ashford.
Yeah, they have my legal name on there instead of my author name.
Which is strange.
I mean, that is my name, but
it's strange, though. They're not really. That's almost like it's being sold by a different author. Yeah. But we talked to them. They said they're going to.
They said they're going to fix it because I can't fix it at my end.
Right.
But hopefully they'll get that.
So we need somebody to review that for us. It's only an hour or something long. You guys will like it.
Yeah.
Whoever gets it.
Yeah, it's short.
What else do we have? We have another channel coming. I think you guys are going to like this.
Yeah, it's going to be a while, but this we'll do like a little hint of it.
It's going to be called 13 o'clock in minutes.
Yeah. You know,
it's going to be like, okay, we're going to use it almost kind of like an advertisement for the podcast and for books and things like that. But each, it'll almost kind of like, some of them will almost be kind of like a list video.
Yeah.
But it'll be really cool the way it looks. I've already seen samples of what.
But
what
similar done. Kind of, similar kind of subject matter as our regular shows.
Each one will be, you know, it's for kind of the younger ADD type crowd. You know what I mean?
Doesn't want to sit through a whole hour.
We understand that. I think each video probably will max out at about 10 minutes, no longer.
Yeah, I don't want them to be any longer than 10 minutes.
And they'll be information packed, and they're really good looking. The graphics Jenny has.
Yeah, I've been working on graphics for him.
So. It's going to have good music in the back, a lot of good graphics. And for now, it's going to be text. I don't think we're going to do voiceover.
Yeah, we're debating whether we should do voiceover or not. Right. It's like I'm leaning toward not because it's easier for me not to do voiceover because I don't have to match up the graphics with the voiceover design.
Right. And there's a lot of other channels that are like this one that we're making that get millions of hits. One of the videos that we looked at got 32 million hits.
36 million.
36 million hits.
Yeah.
And it's going to be something along those lines, but actually a lot better. What they're doing, Jenny and I can do that a lot better.
Well, I just want it to be cooler looking.
Yeah, right.
Like, I like the look of a couple of them, but then, I don't know. Like, I feel like I could make it look kind of cooler, and I don't know, maybe.
You could tell they're not done by a real graphic designer.
Yeah, see, you should leave that shit to the professionals, you guys, like me.
It's going to look and sound really slick. It's going to have really cool background music, and it's going to cover some really cool cases, interesting topics. You guys, you'll see. Yeah. We're going to use that as kind of like a promotional medium for 13 o'clock.
For the main show. This will probably be a few months before I get them put up, because I want to have, you know, several videos.
I actually don't think it'll take that long.
It might not, but I'm just saying. Yeah.
A few weeks, you'll probably see the first batch.
Yeah.
Of them.
Yeah.
I would think. Because we have new hardware coming, too, for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, is there anything else?
I don't think so.
Okay, let's get to the Warrens.
All right, so we're going to talk about Ed and Lorraine Warren. Now, anybody who knows anything about paranormal anything...
Yeah, I mean, almost probably anyone who's listening to this program now...
would probably know who Ed and Lorraine Warren are. Now, these two are probably, I mean, at least in this country, are probably the most famous paranormal investigators ever.
And if you're in your 30s or your 40s or even your 50s, you grew up watching Ed and Lorraine.
Yeah, because they've been on TV a lot. And actually, Lorraine is still on TV quite a bit.
She's on some of the Ghost Hunter type.
She's turned up on some of the Ghost Hunter shows. She's on A Haunting and Paranormal Witness and shit like that. Sometimes she's on there. Because like I said, Ed died several years ago, but she's still going.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So these two, they're kind of like, they're Catholics.
Roman Catholic. Irish,
yeah, they're both from Connecticut.
Yeah.
And they actually formed, what is it called, the New England Society for Psychical Research or whatever it is, for psychic research rather. And that's actually the oldest ghost hunting group in New England.
Yeah.
So they established that in the 50s, like 1952.
Yeah.
So they were kind of ahead of the curve on this one. I gotta give them that. Now, really, the only thing on their resume that would like suit them to this. Now, Lorraine claims that she's a clairvoyant and sensitive and whatnot. And Ed
is a self-taught demonologist.
So I don't think he didn't go to theology school or anything. Not that I could discover.
No.
He was in the Navy, and he was a cop, I think. Wasn't he a cop?
No, I don't remember that. I don't think he was a cop. I think he was just in the Navy, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, no, I think he was a former cop.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing, you know, if you grew up in the United States, you see Ed Warren and Lorraine Warren, you pretty much know what it is you're dealing with. Maybe if you're from Europe or another country, you might not culturally be able to kind of understand what kind of people these are that you're dealing with. Their generation and the way they were. If you ever see the program Archie Bunker,
All in the Family.
Ed was kind of like an Archie Bunker, but a paranormal version of it. Now, he was funny. Okay, he was funny, but he was kind of an urban Irish American kind of a tough guy background.
Yeah,
and he threw his weight around. You can see him in the videos. He's entertaining, but he's just being kind of a thug, you know? Ed's kind of a thug.
a little bit. Like, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I don't like to shit on old people or anything like that. And I genuinely do not think that Ed and Lorraine Warren ever set out to defraud anyone on purpose.
No, I think they were good people.
Or that they're trying to hurt anyone or anything like that. I really don't think that. I really do believe that they believe in their
thing, what they're saying,
in their demons and all that. Right. I really do think they believe in it.
Yeah.
And I really do think that they genuinely think they're helping people.
Yeah. This is very religious based.
Yeah.
Very religious based thinking, and it's kind of a magical thinking type process.
Yeah.
Very folklorish, a lot of the things that they say. Not really scientific and not really backed up with logic or reason.
Right.
Not to say that they were charlatans. The charlatan does things, they know that they're bullshitting you. They
right,
know they're getting
that off. Implies they really, that they're doing it deliberately.
I don't think that's what the situation was. Now, they were motivated by money. Ed was, of course. We can get into that later.
Yeah.
But I really think that they thought they were helping.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely do think that they were trying to maximize profit, sure.
Sure, yeah.
But in a way, I don't think, from everything I've heard, like all the families that they, you know, that they investigated or they helped out or whatever. Now, I don't think they charged them anything other than travel expenses.
No, but everything that the Warrens did, usually it was done in order to either write a book, be on a TV program, or possibly get some kind of a movie deal. Everything was kind of a P.T. Barnum, let's put on a show.
Yeah.
And they would barge into other people's investigations and try to hijack an investigation.
Yeah.
and bringing their own film crews and trying to get as much raw material as they could so they could maximize on it later. Because, hey, this paid for their house.
Yeah.
You know?
Because that's really, I mean, the bulk of their money does not come from the quote-unquote investigation process.
It comes from selling
the results. It comes from selling their books,
yeah.
from going on lecture tours and selling their lecture series. Now, here's an interesting thing. When we were, you know, we've been reading a lot about the Warrens and about, you know, all the movies that were made about their cases and stuff. And we were watching some old interviews with them from like back in the 80s and early 90s. And it's interesting to note that a lot of their interviews, and they used to do like a show, which was kind of hosted by Tony Spera, who I think is their son-in-law.
Yeah.
So they would do shows with him. Now on YouTube, you can only find like the first 6 or 7 minutes of the interviews. And then you have to go to another site to like buy
the show,
the rest of the show.
And you know, I must admit, I was tempted to buy some because
really?
Because man, they're funny. I'm not really buying what I'm hearing. You know
yeah.
I mean? But I wanted to hear what they had to say. You know, it was, yeah. I was looking at it in terms of just entertainment. Now, I also, let's just start off by saying cases that the Warrens were involved in, it's not automatic that it's a hoax. I don't think that they hoaxed a lot of those cases.
Right.
All right. Some of the cases that they were involved in, at least slightly involved in, and sometimes I think were real cases. Other things that they were involved in, if it was just them involved in it, I kind of think maybe it was something not there. Maybe something minor. And of course, they can blow it into a big case because that was in their advantage to have big cases on a regular basis. And I'll tell you what, they were really good at it. They had a constant stream of paranormal material. Let's just say it's paranormal material.
Now, they claim to have investigated between 8 and 10,000 cases.
Yeah.
And they have been involved or claimed to have been involved with many very, very high profile paranormal cases, including Amityville and things of that nature.
Yeah, well, they would track them down a lot of the times. Right. You know, they'd hear about something going on somewhere and they'd show right up and then try to take over the case.
Yeah.
Even though
Of times too, I think they exaggerated their involvement.
Yeah.
Great degree.
Like with Enfield.
Yeah, that definitely did happen at Enfield and stuff like that. But what I was going to say when we were watching like parts of those interviews and stuff like that with Ed and Lorraine, I think they were from 1991 or something like that. And something I noticed about, now Lorraine Warren seems like a very nice lady.
Yeah, I like her clothes. She's got the
She's very old. She's got very the
religious
old school.
She's got the religious clothes.
With all the lacy collars and stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, she has a very distinct fashion sense.
And in case you didn't know, The little dwarf woman from Poltergeist was based actually on
Warren. Zelda Rubinstein, I think, played her. Yeah,
her character is based on Lorraine.
That's based on Lorraine Warren, except shorter, obviously.
Yeah,
but the thing about
Lorraine is a midget better.
Yeah,
I was kidding.
Well, she was a lot more entertaining. Little Zelda Rubinstein. Yeah, she was. But she's dead too, isn't she? That's sad.
Yeah, she died.
Oh well. But what I wanted to say was that. Something that I noticed, like Lorraine seems like a very nice lady. Ed, not so much. Not a nice lady. He seems like not really a nice guy. He seems kind of like a jerk. Here's the thing. Like he would start, you know, talking and ranting and mansplaining or whatever he was doing. And then Lorraine would interject something like, oh, well, there was this thing where blah, blah, blah. Like she would say something related. And then he'd be like, he'd have the attitude like, well,
Don't interrupt me.
Like, well, why can't I tell it? Or why? And I'm like, dude.
Well, he didn't like be upstage.
Back off.
You know, Ed was from a macho time.
Yeah.
He was a Navy guy and, you know, from his generation, you know, and you had Irish city guys and Italian city guys were trying to outdo each other a lot in those days.
Yeah.
Trying to out tough guy each other. And, you know, reflected, you know, it was his generation was a macho generation. So. Sometimes a macho guys like that might overreach.
A little bit.
They might overreach.
Because it seemed like every single one of those interview snippets we saw, there was something where she would try to say something and he didn't tell her to shut up.
Yeah.
But he'd just be like, well, why can't I tell it? Or that's not how it happened. Or he would be like that.
Yeah, it's
like,
kind of funny.
Yeah, he'd be like real short. And I'd be like, man, she put up with that because they were married a long time.
Yeah, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, though. She probably kept his ass in line, though.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And I must say, too, that I think I developed, because before I was just kind of like, oh, frauds, whatever. Yeah. But I developed a lot more kind of sympathy or empathy for her Like, remember when we watched part of that interview yesterday where she was talking about how her and Ed met?
Yeah.
And she was talking about, like, their courting, and then she talked about him going off to the Navy. And yeah. he was in, like, a really bad accident. Like, a ship he was on collided with yeah. another ship.
She thought he was lost at sea.
And most of the guys died.
Yeah.
And he actually did rescue a dude. Like, he put a dude on his back yeah. oh, and, yeah. like, swam in the freezing North Atlantic.
Oh yeah, he wasn't.
And saved this guy's life.
Ed wasn't a fake tough guy.
No,
he was a tough.
He
guy.
Really was a tough guy.
yeah, yeah.
And so I thought that was kind of sweet, like yeah. the way she was talking about him, and she was like, because yeah. she thought he was dead, and he was flipping out. And I was right. just kind of like, oh, I can't yeah. be mad at somebody after they tell yeah. a story like that.
Well, I have kind of a weird mixture of respect and loathing for the Warrens in a certain way. I respect that they worked hard. They brought a lot of paranormal material to light. They entertained a lot of people, and they brought the paranormal onto mainstream television. I got to fucking give them credit to that.
And really,
what I don't like about them though is that I'm not real sure about the honesty all the time. You know,
yeah,
because they hype things up. And they parroted a lot of paranormal misconceptions, and they parroted lots of folk tales over and over about
yeah.
the paranormal. Now, our regular audience, they know that, you know, I've lived with paranormal occurrences, you know, off and on throughout my life, and you've seen them.
Yeah.
I believe in the paranormal because I've witnessed it, and so has my family. But the paranormal's not common. It's rare. And this whole thing about investigating 10,000 ghost cases within a human lifetime, I got to call bullshit.
Yeah. I don't think there's that many.
That would be like witnessing 10,000 airplane crashes in your lifetime.
Yeah.
It's just, there's not enough.
That's a very good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With 10,000 lightning strikes in your life. That's like a boast that the North Korean supreme leader would make. You
know? I've investigated yeah. every single ghost.
Kim Jong-il has investigated every ghost in the planet and defeated the giant sea monsters with his fists.
Yeah.
You know, okay.
Watch our sea monster show from last week. But yeah, so I kind of feel the same way about them. It's like, look, I don't begrudge the people trying to make a living, okay?
Because right.
that's what I'm doing, you know?
Right.
I write books. We have a podcast, you know?
It's funny. It's people that buy Jenny's book. If you see when the related connections, the people that buy your book also buy
the Warrens books.
The Warrens books. Okay.
Which is funny because mine are like more from a skeptical perspective,
yeah,
sort of.
Yeah, I think a little bit more. Well, yours are a little more even-handed and level-headed.
Yeah.
When the evidence isn't good, you say the evidence isn't good. If you
yeah.
don't, if you think something's suspect, you say it's suspect.
Yeah. Which, and I will definitely, like, most of the time, when I was writing The New and the Unseen Hand, it's like, I'm yeah. willing to take most people at face value. It's like, if a bunch of different people saw this particular thing, I'm like, okay, but I'll say that. But if one person saw this thing and it sounded really stupid,
yeah.
and it was just kind of out there, and they didn't have any other, yeah, they didn't have any other evidence backing up.
Right.
Yeah, I'll say this person said they saw that.
Right.
Whether I buy it or not, I don't think so.
And everybody's looking for evidence. And in this paranormal stuff, you're never really going to find hard evidence because it's usually based upon witness testimony, most of it.
Yeah.
Because it happens so fast.
Yeah.
Know? And it doesn't happen under controlled scientific conditions. So
yeah.
it's just going to be witness testimony. And that's all we're going to be able to deal with is testimony.
And the thing too,
the
I think.
Little things. Like I have the little piece of paper with the blood on it and I have
yeah.
photographs, but you know, if we were to get that blood tested, DNA test, I sure would want to know whose blood that is.
Yeah, that would be. I'm kind of curious to find out.
It was one of ours, but we couldn't find any places where we were bleeding.
I don't even know if that would be enough blood to test, though. They could probably do it.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I'm not
let's
sure.
get back. Let's get back to the Warrens.
But so the Warrens now, like I said, Ed died a while back. Now Lorraine Warren is still alive. Now they started an occult museum, quote unquote,
yeah.
which is in the back of their house.
Yeah, and this thing's probably worth a mint. The eBay value's got to be in the millions.
It's got to be like all the stuff they've
yeah.
collected over the years.
Because
it's like full of like stuff they say is possessed that they've
yeah.
taken away from people's houses.
If you can sell a Dybbuk box for $300, that little haunted doll that they have is probably worth $3,000.
Damn it. I wish I had thought of that Dybbuk box. That was genius.
And all the little ghost photos that they had and everything that they've collected. You know,
yeah.
over all the years and all the cases, just for the sheer novelty of it, I would think that some paranormal connect collectors would love to get their hands on that.
Oh, yeah.
On the Warren Museum.
Well, I'm sure after she dies, I don't know if she has it, like, bequeathed to someone or not. Because, yeah. I mean, a lot of her kids and even her nephew, John Zaffis, he's, like, a big paranormal investigator, too. He's quite famous as well. So I'm imagining they'll probably get it or they'll keep running it or whatever. But,
yeah, and if you check out the videos that they make, actually, you know, from what I saw, I'd actually recommend them. I'd buy something like that.
Yeah, I would too.
Just to see it.
Well, see, probably, okay, and probably the most famous thing that's in their occult museum is Annabelle.
Yeah, that's the doll I was talking about.
Yeah, the haunted doll. It's a Raggedy Ann doll. And they actually made a movie. And here's the thing. Probably, I think maybe a lot of younger people nowadays, if they know who Ed and Lorraine Warren are, it's because of The Conjuring.
Right.
The Conjuring 2 and Annabelle, which are all like interrelated movies.
Yeah.
Now, because they're the main characters in this. Now, this is kind of where I have a beef. Okay. The original movie, The Conjuring, which is a good movie. It's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's told from the perspective of Ed and Lorraine Warren, right? So they're kind of like the main characters, and it's this haunted house, and they're investigating it and blah, blah. Now, it's based upon a true, quote-unquote true story, The Haunting of the Perrin Family, okay? And it's based on Andrea Perrin's book, her memoirs of growing up in this farmhouse. It's called House of Darkness, House of Light. And we listened to a really long interview with her. Yes, it was like a 3-hour interview where she was talking about the movie and was talking about the differences between what really happened and what was in the movie and stuff like that. And obviously, now she says, first of all, she said she liked the movie very much. She's like, you know, we lived in the house for 10 years and all this stuff. I mean, the book that she wrote about is 3 volumes. So it's like not a short little whatever. And she's like, you know, the Warrens were the main character in the movie and that's fine. You know, that's how they did it and stuff like that. She's like, and the Warrens did go there. They did investigate it and stuff like that. She's like, and I don't have any like, she didn't really have any animosity toward them. But she said, you know, she said in the movie, it made it look like they kind of like moved in with us and they were there for a long time and stuff like that. She's like, but you got to understand that they were probably only came there like 5 or 6 times over like the course of a year. You know, she's like, they weren't there constantly. They weren't, you know. And she said another thing in the movie, she said they did an exorcism. And she's like, and that didn't really happen. She's like, now what did happen? And this was a good story. Like, I kind of really like this. But she said, this is what happened. She's like, they had a seance, okay? And she's like, and she was just little, her and her sisters, but they were like sitting on the stairs watching. What happened during the seance, allegedly, is that the Warrens, okay, now it should be noted too that the Warrens turned up uninvited. The Perrin family did not call them specifically.
It's getting back to what I was saying before.
Right, to come to our house and help us out with this haunting that we have. She says they heard about it through someone else and turned up there.
That was the MO that they used.
Yeah. And she said, Andrea said that she's like, my father was livid. She's like, he did not want these people here.
Yeah.
He kind of believed there was a haunting, but it sounded like he just kind of wanted to sweep it under the rug and he just didn't want to
blow it off.
Yeah, yeah. He just didn't want to pay attention to it. And so he didn't want these like people coming and stuff. But apparently the Warrens came to do this seance and they show up at the door and it's like 2 cars. It's like an entourage. They brought like a whole crew. Like they brought a psychic and a camera guy and all these other people.
Right.
And Andrea says, she's like, my dad was really mad and all this other stuff. So they have the seance. She's like, it wasn't an exorcism. It was just like a seance. They were trying to talk to whatever. And they were trying to get the psychic to manifest the whatever was haunting the house or whatnot. And she says, now, she says that her mother got kind of possessed and then like her mother like flew loose, was like thrown across the room, like in the chair and was knocked out and stuff like that. Now, this is great because, okay, so Andrea says her dad tries to run to his wife to figure out like to see if she's okay.
Yeah.
And Ed Warren grabbed the dad's arm to keep him from going.
Yeah.
And she says, and Andrea says, my dad clocked him right in the face. Yeah.
Knocked it out.
And then went to see what was the matter with his wife.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories.
There are a lot of stories about Ed,
you know, getting into fights or, you know.
Yeah, he just seems like very, like
well,
I said,
he had a strong willpower and strong ego. I'm sure that, you know, to Ed's, you know, he's on his mission, you know, kind of like a preacher in a certain way. He's got to
Yeah.
You know, he's going to have to spread the word. But in his case, it's paranormal, so he's got to get there. He's probably going to call it an active investigation.
Yeah.
And his version of an active investigation is hunting down where the ghost cases are and taking over.
Yeah.
You know, like a G.
And that, like a G. You know what I mean? I love it.
Yeah.
I do think that I don't think that he ever perceived himself as an obnoxious jerk.
No, I think he thought he was there to save people.
Think he thought of himself like kind of like a superhero.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a demonologist. You have demons. I'm going to help you whether you want me to or not.
Yeah, and he was not really aware of anything outside of his own kind of folklorish concepts of demonology.
Yeah.
He didn't know anything about parapsychology, and he didn't know anything about psychology.
No.
He didn't even know what sleep paralysis was.
Yeah.
You might want to talk about that.
Yeah. There's actually a really good skeptical breakdown, like two skeptics. This was from 1997, but two skeptics, Perry DeAngelis and Stephen Novella, who's a doctor, they actually went to the occult museum and kind of explored all their stuff and interviewed Ed and Lorraine and stuff like that. And they noted that, now they said the same thing we said. They said they seem like very nice people. They seem genuine, sincere. We don't think they're deliberately trying to hurt anyone or defraud anyone or anything like that. Because like, they don't really understand how the scientific method works.
Right.
They don't. And when they, when Ed was talking about, the Smurl case, which we might talk about a little bit after the break, where Jack Smurl said, you know, he would wake up and there'd be like a succubus or whatever, like raping him or like on top of him or whatever. And the skeptics were like, well, are you aware that sleep paralysis is a pretty common thing where you wake up and you think someone's on top of you, or you feel a presence in the room and you can't move? And Ed Warren did not seem to be aware of that rather common thing that happens. And I mean, a lot of, I've had it happen once, it's scary. But I knew what it was, so it's, you know.
Ed's generation wasn't into that kind of stuff. Yeah. They were more into straight-up supernatural.
Yeah.
You know, this was spiritual warfare. Yeah. It involved gods and demons and unknown forces. And I've seen paranormal. I don't think it's what it is. I think it's more in the realm of natural physics.
Yeah.
You know, it's quantum physics.
And I mean, I think...
Like, for instance, if you went up to Ed Warren and started talking about recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, he would, what's that? You know, he wouldn't be down with that.
Right.
And then he said, well, sometimes, you know, it's a mind over matter thing where in certain altered states of consciousness, you know, the human mind can kind of hijack reality, you know, and make some... And Ed would not be the kind of guy that would be open-minded to that. Oh, no, you can't. Oh, no, you can't do that.
Well, the thing about Ed and Lorraine,
very nuts and bolts.
Yeah. You know?
Materialism.
No insult meant to them, but they seem very sheltered. Like, their upbringing.
Retro. They were retro.
Yeah. Their upbringing was very sheltered, very religious. They both came from very, very, very religious families.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's kind of all they know.
Right.
And I think Ed Warren is even stated as like straight up saying
that
you can't understand his work unless you're a believer.
Unless you're
if you're an atheist. Or if you're a scientist or whatever, then there's no way. You don't have faith and you can't understand what he's doing.
Even though what they're doing, I think, is would be considered extremely old school by today's standards.
It is.
They were a productive couple. They did get some interesting cases out there to the media.
Yeah.
And they kind of made the blueprint of a lot of the ghost hunting type.
Yeah, they're like the OG ghost hunters.
Yeah, if they were a rock band, you're talking about what? Led Zeppelin?
Yeah. Like, the Led Zeppelin.
They're like the Led Zeppelin of the paranormal world.
That's hilarious. And on that hilarious analogy,
mama gonna make it home.
I thought you were gonna make it like ghosty lyrics in there. That'd have been funny.
I can't come up with lyrics that fast.
You can't? I've heard you do it. Okay.
Just in the shower.
Yeah, he sings in the shower all the time. It's very funny. But anyway, okay, so we're coming up to the halfway point. So when we get back, I kind of wanted to talk about more of their cases and kind of...
Let's get to some specifics. Okay, I think we painted a general picture of who the Warrens are. It's funny because we're painting a picture to a crowd that knows who the Warrens are, but you know, it's all fun and games.
It's like our usual show. We just kind of like...
Hanging out with us. We're drinking coffee and I'm vaping and Jenny's vaping and we're... bullshitting about the Warrens.
Yeah, that's all. That's all it is.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, so we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
The Necrocasticon, the podcast that blends horror and heavy metal properties with a common connection.
brought to you by hosts Token Term Glock, Max X, Smoking Hot Hades, and Azrael Mordecai. Featuring interviews and more with the stars of Metal and Horror. The Necrocasticon, Mondays on Project Entertainment Network.
Subculture Corsets and Clothing is our favorite store for unusual clothing, shoes, and accessories. They offer a wide selection of men's and women's clothing at great prices. Subculture also offers a cool selection of shoes and accessories. Steampunk, gothic apparel, retro, corsets, and so much more at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Check out Subculture online at subculturecorsets.com. That's subculturecorsets.com. Make sure you use the discount code 13O'Clock for a 10% discount. SubcultureCorsets.com or visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, just off I-95.
It was a time when we raced to the TV guide to see what was playing on Monster Movie Matinee that Saturday afternoon and in some cities that evening. It was all about werewolves, vampires, giant lizards, and those great Japanese monster movies. Relive it all every week as Jim Adams and Mark Maddox bring you Monster Attack. Monster Attack takes a look at those classic monster movies that we all grew up loving. Join us every week on Monster Attack, exclusively on the Project Entertainment Network.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena by Jenny Ashford, author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to the Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
All right, we're back.
Yeah.
Talking about the Led Zeppelin of the
Led, the Led Zeppelin of the paranormal world.
That is so funny.
I think that's kind of, you know, it's either the Led, I would say Led Zeppelin, right?
Yeah, you. I guess so.
Vanilla Fudge?
Where did that come from?
That's even further back.
I know, I was going to say.
The Troggs.
The Troggs.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay, so anyway, so I talked a little bit about the first Conjuring,
yeah.
Because that's probably, like I said, that's probably when they came to a lot of prominence to the newer generation, because that movie was such a big hit.
Yeah.
Now, they also made The Conjuring 2. Now, The Conjuring 2 was very loosely based on the Enfield Poltergeist case.
Yeah,
now,
good movie, but not close to the case. Not really.
Yeah, and the same thing about The Conjuring. It's like the movies were good,
yeah.
But based on a true story, that's a little sketchy.
And I really didn't like how their treatment of the dynamic between Guy Lyon Playfair and Morris Gross.
Well, that was in the BBC one.
Oh, that was the BBC one?
That was the BBC.
And I retract that statement.
Yeah. He's like, never mind.
I'm so old, I can't keep them all straight.
I know.
All those reboots of all those movies. Those newfangled movies.
Those moving pictures.
Yes, I remember back when movies looked like they were all made for TV.
Yeah.
Like, go watch the Amityville Horror now, the original. It looks like a made for TV special.
I thought you were going to say that you remembered when movies were just made out of flip daguerreotypes.
What's that?
I'm younger than you, yeah, and okay. I know what a daguerreotype is. Oh my God, for real, I have to.
I'm not edumacated.
This is. You're not edumacated.
Edumacated.
I have to say this, you guys. This is so funny. Speaking about getting old. This is kind of off the topic, but it's speaking about getting old. Okay, so this past Saturday night, we were out at Independent Bar, like our regular hangout.
Yeah.
And we were hanging out with the dudes from A Starry Night, who are like really awesome, a really, really awesome, like
really
dark wave
band,
indie band. They're from Miami.
Yeah, you gotta go check them out.
And they came up because they were at the theme park, so they came out and hung out at the club with us.
Yeah.
And so I know that they're younger than us. I know that.
Yeah.
But I forget, because they're like super into 80s music and stuff like that. So it's easy to forget that they're, you know.
Yeah.
So me and Tom were joking, and you made a joke about Richard Burton. Yeah. I don't remember what we were talking about.
I was saying that some men can drive drunk, some guys can play guitar drunk, but Richard Burton could act drunk.
Yeah.
He could drunk acting.
He could drunk acting.
Because you can obviously see in some of those movies, that fucker's lit.
He's just,
I was lit when I was telling that story.
It wasn't a very was funny story.
And they just started busting up laughing, you know?
Yeah. So we made a joke about Richard Burton, right?
Yeah, Richard Burton.
So Michael Ghost, who's the lead singer, he says to me, I don't know who Richard Burton is. I was born in 1993.
Yeah, my hair stood up.
I was right? Like, and I just, I put my hand over my mouth and I just stared at him.
Yeah.
And he laughed.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you know what year I graduated high school? 1990. I was like, you could be my kid.
Yeah, I know. That's weird.
And he's like, yeah, but you're rad, so
it's okay. Funny. It's like, we're like their peers.
I know. And
we're old. They go to us for fashion advice.
I know. It's like so funny. They're so awesome. You guys need to go listen to them. They're really cool. If you're like into like The Cure or Joy Division or even if you like Interpol, something like that, they're really good. They're a really good band.
Yeah, I'll put a link to them.
Yeah, they're really good.
You should on the YouTube. You should.
I'll put pictures of them up. Yeah, they'll think that's awesome.
Who Michael is.
Yeah. They'll think that's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, so I was like, so, you know, I'm old. Yeah. I know what a daguerreotype is. But before my time, though. Yeah. So anyway, okay, so The Conjuring 2 was basically, it's not like, Enfield case, BBC made that three-part miniseries too. Yeah. But that didn't have the Warrens in it. But here's why. Now, The Conjuring 2 was supposedly based on Enfield, which we did a whole show on, so I'm not going to go too much into that. But here's the thing. Since The Conjuring 1 had Ed and Lorraine Warren as main characters, this one did too. Problem with that is that according to Guy Lyon Playfair, the guy who wrote the book, This House is Haunted, that was about the Enfield haunting, and he was there with Maurice Gross and all of them for most of the haunting. I mean, it was an 18-month period. I mean, he was there for most of that time. Now, according to him, the Warrens showed up uninvited, quote unquote, one day.
Yeah.
Said the whole thing was a hoax and left.
Yeah. One of the biggest poltergeist cases of all times.
Yeah.
The best recorded, best documented. All the police witnesses, just everything. They said it was a hoax. Then they'd go to a weak case
But here's the thing. That seems really weird to me because that seems like the Warrens.
It's almost kind of like, I think it was player hate.
It might have been.
They didn't have that case, so they had to debunk it. They had to say, no, there was
maybe that's
there.
What, and it was in a different country and stuff like that too. Yeah. So maybe they were going with your British poltergeist.
Yeah, whatever.
But here's the thing: that even if they had like said that it was legit, then they wouldn't say it was poltergeist. They'd say it's demons because they said everything was demons.
Everything is demons. You even made that meme.
I made a meme of the Warrens that said, I'm not saying it's demons, but it's demons.
But it's demons.
I'm going to have to find that. It's right on my computer somewhere. Yeah. I guess I could just remake it.
Not saying it's demons, but it's demons.
But it's demons, because everything is demons. And even sometimes they'll even say, oh, well, there's ghosts and blah, blah, blah.
And there's a
demon.
Right.
And the demons are like suppressing the ghost or the demons are like whatever. So, So the whole thing about The Conjuring 2, it's a good movie. I mean, as a piece of entertainment.
I guess I didn't see that one.
I enjoyed it.
I saw the BBC one. The BBC one was close to...
Well, see, okay, the BBC one, and I think I mentioned this on the show about Enfield. Yeah. Maybe, I don't remember if I did or not. But, you know, the three-part miniseries, it was really good. Like, it had a lot of really good actors in it, like Timothy Spall, who I love. He was in it and all this other stuff. But it seemed like the first two parts were really good. Like, they kept it kind of restrained. And then the third part just went flying off the rails. It just it didn't have anything to do with...
Now we can go back. Now, here's another one that just came to mind. We can go back to the Amityville case.
Yes. All right.
The Amityville case, it's a bad case. It's very weak. Just because the genesis of the case involving lawyers and involving horror writers and guys convicted of murder, that case was just no good. And it doesn't fit any known pattern of anything. I mean, it's not poltergeist. It's not really an interactive haunting. Is it possession? What is it? To me, it's a bunch of crap.
Well, it seems like a mishmash because it is a mishmash.
The Warrens got involved in it, about 20 days after?
20 days after the Lutzes left.
Right. And then they come up with one of the most famous photos of the case, which is just the hallway and the little boy looking around the corner.
Right.
I gotta call bullshit.
That is obviously a fake photo.
Yeah, and that's a little boy.
Well, I don't
in
think
room.
It's fake. It's a
person. Little boy in a room.
It's just a person.
Yeah, and that was taken just the Warrens and their camera crew, no one else there, no other witnesses.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Now, I should note, I don't think here's what happened. Like, the Warrens, after the Lutzes left, because famously they were only there for 28 days and then they got the fuck out.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, we did a show about Amityville 2 where we called it a hoax because I think most people think it is a hoax. And yeah. I mean, you know, most people, normal people do. So I guess I'm not sure who called the Warrens
in. Let's put it this way. The case as presented in the movie and the book is a hoax.
Yeah.
Maybe something happened there, but only the family would know. And that's not the case we're given.
Right.
When we talk about the Amityville, we're talking about the movie and the book.
Yeah.
You know, and the stuff that the Lutzes would say in the, okay, you can take the Lutzes account over the radio, or, you know, when they do radio interviews.
Yeah.
What they're saying that happened, there were no witnesses to, so you couldn't prove it one way or the other. But I would tend to think that that case.
Well, and the thing is that a lot of things they
said. And
they're
very vague
when
they're doing an interview. Really vague.
And the thing is, a lot of things they said could be disproven after the fact. Like, remember how they said, oh, the front door was blown off its hinges. Oh, we called the cops on X date. The records show that they did not. No. And they, you know, they also had that thing where, oh, we saw hoof prints in the snow. There was no snow on that day where they said they saw that.
Yeah.
And all this other stuff. So a lot of their stuff is kind of sketchy. But now, I'm not sure who called in the Warrens to the Amityville case. They came there.
The Warrens called the Warrens.
Yeah, well, they came there with a news crew.
Oh, they did?
So, like a local news crew. So maybe what happened was the news wanted to do like a story about it. So they got these two to come.
I would think that Ed wanted to cover the case. He goes down there and goes to the local news saying, we're going to put on a big show here. You're going to have a really good story. Come with us. We're going to go to a haunted house.
Yeah.
That's probably what happened. Because if I was trying to make a living the way Ed was trying to make a living, that's what I would have done. And I was trained a direct salesman.
Yeah.
I'll go to your house and try to sell you something back in the day. They have the internet now, it does. But anyway, that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was going like, and they're going to document my investigation.
Right.
All right. As impartial witnesses, supposedly, which I guess they were.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what, that's.
Yeah.
They were shameless self-promoters. That's what you do. You go right to the news. Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Like I said,
house.
I can't really, like, I find that I can't really fault them for that too much because.
No, that was how
like
you did.
Said, that was the hustle, you know.
And that
it's
was
like,
how you did business back then.
Yeah. And if that's how you're making a living, then, you know, fair enough.
And that was the hustle of the day. That's how you, when I say hustle, that kind of sounds lowly and cheap, but we're just having fun here, you know. That's how business was kind of conducted.
Yeah.
That's how the paranormal was handled in those days in the United States.
Yeah. So I don't know if they were doing anything different. They were just better at it.
Yeah, they were good at it.
But
they could tell a good story and they could put it into a framework that the average American could kind of like emotionally buy into because it was religious based.
Yeah.
You know, and in those days, you know, the church was stronger in those days.
And it should be noted, too, that there were plenty of people who had hauntings or possessions or whatever they thought they had that did legitimately call the Warrens for help.
Yeah.
And there are lots of people who said that the Warrens helped them, that, like, the stuff went away after they left. Now, also, I should note that the case that The Conjuring was based on, the Perrin haunting, she said that it got worse after their intervention.
Yeah. Okay.
But she's on record as saying that. But she didn't really, like I said, she didn't have any animosity toward them necessarily. She just said, well, they exaggerated their involvement and stuff like that.
Right.
Now, another case that was very famous that the Warrens were involved in was the Snedeker case, or Snedeker, or however you pronounce their name.
Man, that's a good story.
And that was based on, that was the movie, The Haunting in Connecticut, was based on their story. And there was also, now they were on, was it a haunting or paranormal?
They were on both.
Or both.
They were on both. And
so,
I tell you, the version that was told on The Haunting, that series was awesome. I loved that version of the story.
It was that was a good episode.
That one really had me intrigued because I'd forgotten about that case.
Yeah.
Because I've seen the Snedekers like on, remember the old daytime talk shows? Like,
that's right. Weren't they
like
on Sally
Maury
Jesse?
Povis
they were
Sally
on Sally Jesse Raphael.
Right. I'd see them on there and it was just fascinated, you know, that I'd had a poltergeist experience when I was a kid. So I was, it must get really bad. You know?
Yeah.
So I really didn't really pick through that case, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, I wasn't really trained. You know, I just, at that point, I was pretty young. I just had my own personal experiences, but I hadn't read any parapsychology books or, you know, so I just kind of took it at face value and I was like, wow, that really blew me away. And then when I saw it on Haunting, I thought that was a really interesting, fascinating case. But now that I know more about it.
Well, okay. The thing about their case.
Yeah.
Is that...
It's told in a lot of different ways.
Okay, now here's... this is the one, in case you don't remember the Snedeker case. Like I said, it was the haunting in Connecticut was based on it. And it was kind of a pretty loose interpretation. I saw the movie a while back. But this is the one where they where the son had cancer. He had Hodgkin's lymphoma. And they moved to this house to be closer to the hospital. And the house they moved into used to be a funeral home.
Yeah.
And down in the basement, there was still stuff like left from the funeral home.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff like that. Now, the problem with this is that the accounts of the family are not, are inconsistent.
Yeah.
It seems like in some interviews, Carmen Snedeker, I think she has a different name now because I think she remarried, but because she's still around. She actually is a spiritual advisor or something now. But I can't remember what her new last name is. But in some interviews, she said, we didn't know it was a funeral home before we moved in. Now, the landlord calls bullshit on that because he said, everyone knew it was a funeral home. I told them it was a funeral home.
Right.
And, you know, so... and all this other stuff. Now, and also, she says in some interviews, I didn't see any paranormal activity until later.
Right.
And for a while, she thought her son was just hallucinating it, because she even asked the doctor, evidently, like if the cancer drugs he was on could cause hallucinations or cause these personality changes or something like that, because it seemed to affect him the most.
Right.
And then other times she said, oh, I was mopping the floor and the bucket filled with blood, or, you know, things like that. Like, she saw things.
One of the things I remember is that, you know, I had seen them on a couple of different programs. This is in the early days.
Yeah.
And on one of them, I think it's like on the second or third time they appeared on television. I don't remember if it was like Maury Povich show or maybe Sally Jesse. It might have been Maury Povich, I think. About half of the audience was up in arms against the Snedekers. And it turns out they were the neighbors.
Ah,
yeah, they were all the neighbors, and they were basically calling bullshit on them that didn't happen. And some of them were kind of like the nosy neighbors, you know, with the, they had some woman, she stands up, she's got like a pen and paper, and she's checking stuff off. On June 23rd, you move up, and all that kind of
damn,
shit. She's cute. It was ridiculous. But when I remember,
we got to find that on YouTube.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. And I remember that when I saw that at the time, I'm like, what the hell's going on? Why is the whole neighborhood up in arms about these people? You know, these poor people, you know?
So yeah.
But looking at it now, they think they're kind of full of shit. Now, Ed Warren was talking to somebody who was writing a book about it, I think, or a case analysis. You might know the well, how did that go? Ed just told me, write whatever you want. They're crazy.
Yeah, here's the thing. This is good, because this is the next point I was going to make.
Yeah.
Now, the movie, The Haunting in Connecticut, is mostly based on a book called In a Dark Place, a story of a true haunting or something like that. It was written by a horror writer named Ray Garten.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ray Garten has gone on record as saying that the stories that he got from all the family members over time and all the different families were inconsistent, and it was very difficult for him to write the book. He said the family was going through a lot of problems, alcoholism, drug addiction, things like that. He's like, they couldn't keep their story straight. I got different stories from different people, and it was very hard for me to put them together. Now, he says... he has gone on record as saying that Ed Warren told him point blank, the family is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Just write what you want and make it scary.
Yeah, that's
so they were just trying to make a scary book and not really trying to make anything that was true to what really happened or anything like
that. Which kind of takes me back to my opinion of the Warrens. This mostly has to do with Ed, okay? Ed and Lorraine Warren were basically kind of like religious fundamentalists.
Mm.
And in religions... people will tend to kind of toe the party line. They'll tell little white lies to keep faith built up. Would be a good way to put it, Jenny. Like, you know, you kind of, if you ever go to church, if you have a religious background, I guess when I was young, you know, when I was young, I was in a, you know.
Yeah, you probably know more about that than me, because I was not raised religious.
Sometimes religious people will tell little white lies to keep people believing in the religion.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Right?
Well, I think the Warrens kind of did the same thing, but about the paranormal.
Yeah.
They might have an interesting case going on. Maybe there's something to it, but it's not quite as good as they want it to be, or it doesn't quite support the religious narrative that they want. So they'll lie a little bit to flavor the case the way they want that case flavored.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean that case didn't happen. Yeah. It just means that that case didn't really happen the way that
they wanted it to happen.
They didn't really tell you exactly what happened. And in some cases, the case wasn't there. But they're going to lie and say the case was there to help support the other ones.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
This is another one. This isn't a real case, but we're going to blow this into a real case and add it to the woodpile because, you know what? That proves that God is real. And how is that wrong?
Right.
That's kind of
That's what I was going to say. That's like, I don't think that they would consider it lying, quote unquote.
No.
Or sinning, because lying is supposedly
sin. It's helping people.
Because they think they're establishing a greater good.
Right.
They're bringing more people
into
God, into the faith, so it can't be bad.
Right, exactly.
So I think that's,
that's a good way. Thank you for helping me. I have a hard time. You know,
no, you were doing good. You were doing good.
Struggle with words.
I think that's what they're doing. So like I said, that's what we mean when we say, I don't think they're doing anything like to deliberately defraud people or deliberately hurt people. You know,
Not in their minds.
I think they think that they're justified.
Right.
Now, I want to mention too, like a couple other cases they worked on. There was the Smurl case, which actually I'm surprised they haven't made a big budget movie. They made a made for TV movie in 1991 that was just called The Haunted.
Yeah, it's funny.
And it has the guy that played Dale in The Walking Dead, you guys. It was in it. getting raped by a pig creature or a succubus.
I got to see that. What's funny is that all these old cases have matured into legend and now that they're making movies out of them.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's funny.
The funny thing about the Smurl case, like I didn't, you know, I don't really have time to go hugely into it and stuff like that. Maybe we can do a whole show on it one day because it's kind of interesting. I wrote about it in my book, The Unseen Hand. I wrote about it in there, a section of it. But an interesting thing about it is that all the ghost raping that took place in it.
Ghost raping.
Like, some of it was done by a succubus who looked like a hag, kind of.
Yeah.
But also, some of it was done by a pig creature.
Yeah.
Which is weird because, you know, Jody from Amityville Horror, also a pig creature. What's with the pigs walking around the TV?
It was 70s.
Is that a Satanist thing, or was that a 70s thing?
I think it had to do with Deliverance and Squeal Like a Pig.
You think?
Maybe.
I don't know. I wondered if it was some kind of... I wondered if it was some kind of satanic thing, or maybe it was even a throwback to maybe Lord of the Flies. I don't know. Lord of the Flies because the pig head, you know?
That was all just kind of mushed in together into the 70s mindset.
Yeah, maybe there was just a whole, like, gestalt of
Satan.
Pigs and Satan. Because they have hopes.
And homosexual rape and the devil.
Yeah.
It all goes together.
It all just goes together. Oh, I should note, too, that...
and Jody.
Pig rape.
Yeah.
If that's the only thing you take away from this episode.
Yeah, yeah. Name of this episode is Pig Rape. Homosexual Pig Rape.
Oh, my God. Oh, shit.
Like, back in the day.
Back in the day, there was
a 70s thing.
Pig rape. A walking pig. It's a two-legged pig. It's not like an actual pig. It's a person. Like
George's Lutz stepson, what was his name, one that did the little thing?
What is his name, Daniel?
I think it was something like that. He said that when he looked up in the Amityville case, when he looked up and he saw the pig in the window, in the window, he said it looked like a cartoon pig with a wolf's teeth and a big old smile looking down at him.
So
it looked like a cartoon.
Yeah, that's right. He did say that, didn't he? He said it looked like a cartoon pig.
Yeah.
Oh, and it should be noted, too.
Which, that's a freaky idea.
It is. Didn't George Lutz say he saw that, too? Because here's the thing. And they actually put this in the movie. And here's the thing.
In the movie,
The Amityville Horror, you can actually see Jody up in the window when George Lutz is coming back from the boathouse. You have to, like, slow it down. It's, like, real subtle.
Yeah. It's
like
just
you,
so much
I
red lines.
Yeah, I didn't really notice it at the time until I saw it in HD. But now he says, Daniel says that him and George were outside and they looked up in the window and saw the pig in Missy's window.
Okay.
And then,
when they went up
to the room,
she
was asleep and all that was going on was the rocking chair in her room is rocking by itself.
Right.
So they didn't actually like see it. They saw it just up in the window.
Yeah.
That's what they said anyway. So pig creature, I don't know.
Yeah.
But speaking of man-like creatures, I just wanted to mention, Ed and Lorraine Warren have also written a book called Werewolf.
And it's
about an actual werewolf,
guys.
Right. Supposedly.
I forgot about that.
Yes, an actual werewolf.
Ed investigated a werewolf case.
Yeah. And that, it's like, I probably don't have time to go into it, but it was a guy named Bill Ramsey. And supposedly, like, he was wigging out and the police arrested him and stuff. And they sent him to a mental hospital and they said there's nothing wrong with him and blah, blah, blah. But the Warren said that he grew teeth and ears and shit like that, and that he was a werewolf, and they wrote a whole book about it, so you know, you can look that up if you want to. And
it was kind of like the American Van Helsing.
Yeah. I'm sure that's how he styled himself.
Although he wasn't as skinny as the Van Helsing I know.
Peter Cushing?
Peter Cushing.
Yeah. Oh my God, we're talking about Peter.
Mr. No Back Teeth himself.
Mr. Peter Cushing. Where does it, I know.
Man, I want those cheekbones.
I know. I want those cheekbones. God damn. I'd like to look like that when I'm old. He was so rad looking. Oh, and also, I want to mention this too before the end of the show because we only have a couple minutes left. This is also fascinating too. And this, I didn't write about the werewolf in my book because werewolves is kind of out of my bailiwick. But I did write about this case, and it's usually referred to as the Devil Made Me Do It case. And the Warrens were also involved in this. It was the trial of Arnie Cheyenne Johnson. Now, this story, at least the first part of it, was actually on a haunting also. Okay. I think it was on the episode called Where Demons Dwell, the one about the well.
Yeah, that was a good episode.
And the little 11-year-old boy that saw the man and he got possessed. And
that was the old school of haunting.
Yeah, I think it was the first or second season.
Those first two seasons were awesome.
Yeah.
After that, it started to go downhill.
But if you saw that episode, that was actually based on a real case. Yeah. And what ended up happening later was that the quote-unquote demon that supposedly possessed the little boy, and they got it out of the boy, but it went into the little boy's sister's boyfriend, or fiancé, Arnie Cheyenne Johnson. Now, allegedly, this demon got inside him, and years later, Arnie Cheyenne Johnson stabbed his landlord to death.
Yeah.
Alan Bono was, I think, the landlord's name. And when he went to trial, the Warrens testified on his behalf that he was possessed by a demon. Right. As far as I know, this is the only case in American jurisprudence where somebody actually tried to say not guilty by reason of demon possession.
Damn.
Did it work? No.
No, but the Warrens showed up on camera.
They showed up on camera and they said, yes, he's totally possessed by a demon. Right. We knew this was going to happen because I think they had been involved even like when the 11-year-old kid. Now, it should be noted, too, that when the kid grew up. Okay, now let me sort this out. When the kid grew up, I think him and his brother sued the Warrens because they said, you know, you made us look bad. There was no demon, blah, blah, blah. But Arnie Cheyenne Johnson and the kid's older sister, who that later married, they said, no, it all happened just the way we said.
Okay.
So, you know, but the Warrens did get sued. I don't know if they won or not.
Probably not.
But Arnie Cheyenne Johnson, he actually, the demon possession thing didn't work.
Yeah.
But because of the circumstances surrounding the murder,
what
ended up happening, he ended up stabbing the guy because the guy, his landlord, was drunk and it actually snatched up his niece or something, who was 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to get the guy to let her go.
Right.
And he wouldn't. And he was being all belligerent.
Right.
And so they got in a fight and he stabbed him. So he just got manslaughter.
Oh, okay.
Because he said it was kind of self-defense. I think he only did a couple years, maybe five years, something like that. But like I said, the demon possession shit didn't work out because, you know, the judge was like, you can't prove that, whatever.
Right.
But that's, as far as I know, that's the only time that the Warrens have gone on record in the trial.
Why would you want to sue the Warrens? The Warrens never struck me as rich.
I think they
made a living, but I don't think they ever got rich.
Well, I think they sued them later because of emotional distress and because they painted Glatzel, the kid.
What could you get from them? They weren't millionaires.
Well, you know, I know. Right. But, you know, why does anybody sue anybody? They were bad. They pissed off.
Right.
But like I said, I don't know if they won or not. But shit, we could go on all day about this, but yes.
Yeah, we're already pretty much kind of
we're kind of at the end of the show. So I guess, you know, if you want to hear any more about the Warrens,
we can always revisit the Warrens.
There's shit, yeah, because they have like lots more cases that we could talk about. And I didn't even wanted to get into the werewolf thing, but
I'm sure they'll come up.
We should do a show about werewolves now that I think about it.
I don't know.
I'm just kidding.
We don't do a show on werewolves. Werewolf.
All right.
I think a werewolf is nothing more than just a medieval misunderstanding of a serial killer. You find a person, a woman dead, and she's partially gnawed on. Nowadays, that's a serial killer. Back in those days, oh my God, a human couldn't do that. That was a man who turned into a wolf. And it's because the Romans had stories like that.
Or like Florida Man, that guy that ate off that other guy's face.
Yeah.
Because they said he was on bath salts. That wasn't why, though. Although, I don't think they ever determined why that happened.
No.
Just a crazy dude.
No, they didn't talk about it anymore.
This is a zombie, you guys.
Why were they naked down in the traffic?
See, that's what's so intriguing. It's Florida.
And they were bums. Weren't they bums?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'd have to revisit that, because I remember hearing about it at the time, and it's just like...
Weird gay bum sex going on with bath salts. In the middle of traffic.
But see, I think they did... I think they did drug tests on that guy, and he wasn't bath salts.
Well, I don't think... Is there a drug test for bath salts?
Oh, I don't know.
What is
I just
bath
heard that
salts?
it wasn't drugs.
What is bath salts? I've never really had a good explanation of what it is.
I don't know.
Some people call it flaca. There's some really cool videos of people that have taken it.
There are some very funny videos.
Robots. They look like broken robots.
Yeah.
You'd have to be a moron to want to take that.
Maybe it feels really good when you take it.
I don't know.
But you just look really stupid.
I'm just looking. Go on YouTube and go look at Flocka. F-L-O-K-A, Flocka. And see, you tell me if you want to do Flocka.
Like I said, maybe it feels really awesome to you. It's just you just look dumb to other people.
It's not worth it.
Maybe it's one of those things. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so we're getting to the end of the show, so I guess we'll wrap it all up. So once again, going to give a thank you to Project Entertainment Network, who hosts our audio podcast. You guys are rad. And yeah. Go check out all of their other podcasts. They have many, and spanning many different subjects.
Yeah.
And also,
keep your eye out for our new channel coming soon.
Yeah, it'll be out pretty soon. And yeah. Also, if you want to check out some of my books, you may do so. I still have some free audio book codes for some of my other books. So, if you want one of those, contact me if you want one of the free audiobooks. I have a bunch still for Unseen Hand, and I have a couple for some of my older books too. But you have to say that you're going to write a review. You have to write a review because that's the whole point of me giving them out.
Yeah, and what's funny is that you only have 5 reviews on the audiobooks. They're all 5 stars. The audiobooks are flying off.
Yeah.
Flying off the shelves. The ebook of the same book, you just only sold like 2 ebooks, and it's because there isn't any reviews.
Yeah.
Would somebody please buy that damn ebook?
And review it. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's only $6.
Once it gets the first review, they start selling.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like $6.
Yeah. So if one of you would do that, that'd be cool.
I don't think we can't give those away free, huh?
No.
We don't have free
that's all, yeah, that's only the audiobooks that I get for that.
And the person that buys the audiobook off of the Amazon, actually, they can't write the review on Amazon.
I'm not really sure how that works.
Audible, doesn't it?
It goes on Audible. Yeah.
Okay, weird.
They used to transfer over, but I don't know if they do.
Well, it'll eventually happen. No big deal.
But anyway, okay. Right. So I think that's all we have for today. And see you guys next Tuesday for another bullshit session.
Yeah.
Bye. Yeah.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.